In other news.
You know, the towers did not burn up. They turned into powder in midair.
That's scary to have this helicopter hovering around.
We walk up to him and confront him. They can't stand that.
Welcome to Another News. I'm Jeff Brady. Since our interview with Kent Bain about his book, Blackjack, The Dawning of the New Great Age of Satan, earlier this year, the pandemic catalyst ignited a quick transition for populations to slip into a tighter system of enslavement, utilizing existing and new digital infrastructure. The children are told it's for faster download speed, but the scientific report scrubbed from the NIH site titled 5G Technology and Induction of Coronavirus in Skin Cells sounded the alarm. The Italian scientists found that our own bodies create the COVID-19 virus to help repair holes in the nucleus of its cells caused by fifth-generation wireless millimeter radiation. It's a tighter wave pattern that can be turned up to 60 gigahertz and maybe higher. From the report, quote, these waves produce some holes in liquids within the nucleus. To fill these holes, some extra hexagonal and pentagonal bases are produced. These bases could join to each other and form virus-like structures such as coronavirus. To produce these viruses within a cell, it is necessary that the wavelength of external waves be shorter than the size of the cell. Thus, 5G millimeter waves would be good candidates for this in constructing virus-like structures such as coronaviruses, COVID-19, within the cells. While we were sheltering in place, Verizon, T-Mobile, and other telecoms launched multi-billion dollar 5G infrastructure buildouts. Remember the COVID-19 outbreak in Miami a few weeks ago? 5G was recently turned on in South Florida. Is this likely a coincidence? Go back to the news about Wuhan, China prior to the pandemic, when their highways were lined with tens of thousands of 5G antennas for self-driving cars. Yet we're told about wet markets and bat soup. It starts to make more sense that the human body is reacting to a quantum leap in ambient EMF, specifically a transition from microwave to millimeter wave. Are these the same millimeter waves that can screen people right through their clothes, rendering them essentially naked on airport monitor screens? Except now you're exposed on every street corner and inside your home. Meanwhile, doublethink is used to disorient the populace, such as wear a mask, then don't wear a mask, then mandatory mask rule. After the frontline doctor's press conference, there's a new effort to ban hydroxychloroquine treatment because it's important for the power structure to inject you with a vaccine. However, in recent news, more than half of participants suffered adverse reactions from Moderna COVID-19 vaccine trials. But remember, some companies selling the vaccines have legally protected themselves from being held accountable for any adverse side effects. A similar indemnity is structured to protect telecoms whose radiation emissions are known to cause negative human health impacts. A primary element for the power structure is the full spectrum dominance over the populace, and it's taking a big step by saturating human environments with millimeter wave wireless radiation for many reasons, including new surveillance platforms. Again, amid all of this is the COVID-19 virus that is now explained in a scientific report to be created by our bodies reacting to millimeter wave wireless radiation. This has been long in the planning, maybe thousands of years, according to our guest Kent Bain, author of Blackjack, The Dawning of the New Great Age of Satan. We're getting close to a special date, a date that has been recently decoded within the numbers and landscape of Washington, D.C., such as zip codes, memorials, symbols, parks, and deliberately positioned stones cut to track the processional entrance and exit of the Great Ages. We're closing in on a 26,000-year event, and author Kent Bain asks, knowing the power structure's penchant for mass sacrifice and murder, how will this event be commemorated? Kent Bain is a returning guest. He was on the show in April of 2013 discussing his publication, The Most Dangerous Book in the World, 9/11 as a Mass Ritual. He's also the author of the book Most Dangerous, A True Story. All of these books, including Blackjack, are published by Trinday. Kent, welcome back to Another News.
Great to be here.
Well, Kent, many researchers have delved into the sacred geometry of Washington, D.C., but I've yet to read about an actual message or a countdown encoded into the landscape. Your book, titled Blackjack, The Dawning of the New Great Age of Satan, stays focused and begins with an overview of false flag terrorism and then connects into this country's historic legacy of secret societies, coded architecture, and esoteric beliefs. Would you give listeners a breakdown of the 2012 galactic alignment, the related doomsday prophecy, and an overview of what you found regarding the end of the Great Age?
Galactic alignment, your listeners may be somewhat familiar with. It was the buzzword in the year 2012. There was a supposed Mayan doomsday that was set to occur in 2012 in conjunction with a specific astronomical alignment. And it turns out the Mayans never made such a prediction, but it ties to the cycle of precession. And the Earth wobbles on its axis and very slowly, and that takes about 26,000 years. And the cycle is set to start and finish based on an alignment with galactic center, the center of our Milky Way galaxy. And the Mayans' calendar was tied to that occurrence, and it is actually galactic alignment itself has been occurring over about the past 40 years. The end of the Mayan calendar coincided with that. Differing opinions from academics versus fringe researchers as to what the meaning of that was, but it is an astronomical fact that this alignment is occurring. And as I looked at it further, I realized that 2012 was not, in fact, the technical end of the cycle of precession as defined by galactic alignment itself, that the end of that cycle really occurs at the end of 2021 and at the beginning of 2022. It's all from Earth's perspective, no physical alignment of objects that's going to create some geomagnetic effect that will induce a pole shift or any other type of physical effect. It's all purely observational, but that's very significant for followers of astrology, and certainly many cultures have aligned their calendars to the stars and fixed important dates to specific alignments. So it's an extremely significant occasion that occurs only once every 26,000 years. And as I've researched, I found that this has been encoded by a variety of cultures and civilizations in a variety of ways up into the modern era. And the subject of the book is, the current book is how this is encoded in our capital in Washington, D.C., and it's encoded in a variety of ways, but that's the general premise of the book.
And what was significant about your findings initially about the Great Age compared to the 2012 galactic alignment?
You know, there are various ages with a little a, Pisces, Aquarius, and so forth. The Great Age is composed of all of the sub-ages, if you will. Each age is roughly 2,000 years in length. You'll hear various estimations for the length of each, but usually it's about 2,000. And the full cycle of precession figure you hear most often is 26,000 years for the full length of the Great Age or the Great Year or the cycle of precession. And that is the grand calendar by which many civilizations, referred to as the wheel in the sky, and it's encoded in many different ways in many different cultures. Outline a number of different instances of that in Blackjack.
Your book is titled Blackjack, but it's also a reference to something called Project Blackjack. Would you tell listeners about the significance of this?
Project Blackjack was a fictitious article or a series of articles and multimedia productions that was featured in the London Telegraph back around 2009. And it basically presented a scenario for a mega 9/11, multiple nuclear attacks on major cities across the world, including Washington, D.C., Las Vegas, London. And it was a really curious event, the publishing event, really. It was vague, certainly at first, as to who the creators were, what the whole point of it was, and some different researchers looked at it and tracked down the parties responsible for creating it. But the fact that it was published in such a prominent publication and with such sort of vague, under such vague circumstances, it got a good bit of attention from the alternative media. InfoWars and other outlets covered it pretty extensively, but the date that Project Blackjack had set for this nuclear holocaust came and went, of course, without occurrence, and so everyone just forgot essentially forgot the whole episode. But there is a very good reason why we should take another look at that that I outline in the book. That If listeners are familiar with predictive programming, specifically as it relates to false flag attacks and 9/11 in particular, they know that you can look back in the years leading up to September 11, 2001, and see encoded references in a variety of media, movies, television shows in particular, and see hints that were left purposely, clues indicating foreknowledge of the 9/11 attacks, that were subtle cues that if we had known, the general public had known, what was coming, we would have been able to see those hints beforehand. But in retrospect, we can certainly look back and see that they were very intentional, purposeful clues. There were quite a large number of them. And the scenario I present in Blackjack ties back to Project Blackjack and this publishing of this really curious set of multimedia presentations that was published, and actually, I believe it is still online. And so I provide background on a little bit more detail on Project Blackjack and reproduce some of the slides that were in the presentation. But that's one of the clues that we can look at now and at the current time, and perhaps project forward to the next few years and have some idea of what may be in the plans for us at the end of the Great Age, the beginning of the new Great Age. That scenario is not guaranteed to unfold as it was presented in Blackjack, but many times predictive programming is quite specific. The actual event that is foreshadowed may not unfold exactly as presented in the predictive programming, but it's close enough that clues count. We should pick up on these things from the perspective of those who organize these false flag attacks. These clues, the predictive programming, count as advance warning. And if we're not sophisticated enough to pick up on these clues and these warnings and protect ourselves, then that's too bad for us. According to their thought and their philosophy, they've provided advance warning to us, and then that absolves them of any moral responsibility for anything that then happens to us or that they do to us. So it certainly is not the way that you and I think or that the average person thinks, and I try not to get into too much detail on occult philosophy and thought, but just enough to set the stage and so that people can understand what we're dealing with, what they're confronted with, and what the possibilities are. And I certainly never claim to know with any precision what is going to happen. I try to present possibilities and build a case. And I think that this is the scenario that I outlined in Blackjack presents a good educated guess, but as to what will actually happen at the transition of the old age to the new age, it could be Blackjack, it could be something similar to Blackjack, or absolutely nothing at all. It depends on the goals and intentions of the cryptocracy, the globalists, and if we keep our eyes open, perhaps we can have some inkling of what's in store for us. But one thing I've learned in writing the three books that I've published thus far is that you cannot predict what our controllers will do. You can follow them. They leave, clues and breadcrumbs, but it is very, very difficult to use that to predict a future action. So I present, I think, a really, really good educated guess as to what will occur at the end of 2021, beginning of 2022, but nothing is a given.
Chapter 15 is titled The House of the Rising Sun. You pose the question, the Potomac River represents the Milky Way galaxy and the U.S. Capitol represents the galactic center. Where in the landscape layout of Washington, D.C. could we expect to find the galactic alignment itself encoded? Well, please tell listeners about this chapter because it's another prime revealing of long-range planning within the architecture of the U.S. government.
The tradition of mapping the heavens to the earth is an ancient one, and there are many capital cities that you can point to over eons and uncover, unearth, how they have mapped specific astronomical features literally onto the landscape. And so you have various places, objects representing certain astronomical features, and various alignments being encoded. We tend to think of our modern America as being distant from that tradition, when in fact what we find in Washington, D.C. is one of the clearest examples of that. And those listeners that are familiar with Freemasonic tradition and this subject in general, it won't surprise them that the tradition of encoding as above, so below, into the landscape is clearly evident in our nation's capital. And other researchers have written on this topic, but I fully believe that there's an overarching message that perhaps we've missed over the past decades and centuries that points directly to this upcoming alignment, in this transition from the old great age to the new great age. And I think that it's encoded in multiple ways using multiple symbols. They're reinforcing, they're overlapping, they reiterative. It's not just one set of symbols or buildings, street layout constructions that contain this information and contain this formula. There are multiple iterations of it. The process of galactic alignment itself, or the occurrence of galactic alignment itself, involves several of the most well-known architectural icons in the Washington, D.C. landscape, the Capitol building and the White House. And it's a little bit difficult to explain that, how all of that works. I've got maps and so forth in the book itself, but you've got the most prominent location in our country, in our nation, in our nation's capital, and you could argue in the world, encoding one of the most significant events, astronomical events, of this 26,000-year great year or cycle procession. And I outline how the galactic alignment is encoded with these symbols and the street design of Washington, D.C., and then On top of that, there are various ways that the cryptocracy has confirmed or reiterated that this alignment is, in fact, real, that these encodings are legitimate. and trying to explain it in a radio interview is kind of difficult, but it involves, of all things, you know, these secondary confirmations involve the zip codes in the Washington landscape. And I'll leave the details of that. Hopefully your listeners will pick up the book and read it. But, you know, this is all not done in pure seriousness, and that's one thing that can be difficult to grasp is the, you know, a lot of black humor is incorporated into false flag events and into the various activities and plans of the controllers, and in this instance it's no different. So you've got several different ways that are actually quite funny that when you understand what the alignments are supposed to be, what objects represent which astronomical features, and you know, you understand that this is a part of a long tradition going back centuries that you can find in other capital cities all across the world. And then you think, well, if I got this correct, if, you know, I've interpreted this correctly, the ways in which they provide these confirmation codes or hints that, hey, yes, this is exactly what this means and you're on the right track, they're actually quite funny. And I know that sounds bizarre that they would go to such lengths, invest such time, energy, and resources into encoding something that seems to be of such seriousness and importance. But, you know, they not infrequently kind of stand back and not necessarily make fun of themselves, but do things that are just darkly humorous. And I suspect that is in part a one element of the mockery that they direct at the general public, the useless eaters. They not only control our environment and all aspects of our existence, but then they frequently mock us to our faces, and we're not aware of it. So, you know, some of what I'm describing here, it seems fantastic, perhaps unbelievable. But I would just say, you know, this, I found this book somewhat challenging to try to describe in a brief time frame, because it's really, once you sit down and plug all the pieces together and look at the sum total of the evidence, that you go, okay, there's a rational argument here, and it could certainly say what the author is purporting that it says, or what means what I say it means. So that's the long and the short of that.
Author and past guest Michael Hoffman had written that satire is really important in the occult scheme, especially as epilogue, and mockery, he writes, is the zenith of ceremonial murder. But I want to look at the city of Washington, D.C., in conjunction with two other cities. When Congress passed the Act of 1871, it created a separate corporate government for the District of Columbia. This allowed the District of Columbia to operate as a corporation outside of the Constitution. From what I understand, London, the Vatican, and Washington, D.C. are known as the Trinity of Babylon. You have finance, religion, and the military. The three cities are sovereign entities. They're not part of the countries they're located in. The architecture and layout of all three cities are heavily coded, but have you found similar messages embedded in layouts of London and the Vatican?
That's a great question, and I have looked, and I have not. Of course, there are quite a number of things that are encoded into the layout of Vatican Square, and if I understand correctly, the technical city of London is a separate entity from, you know, London, the larger metropolis. There's I forget how many square acres it is, but it's, you know, a smaller region within London itself. The encodings could be there that reinforce the message that is in the landscape or the cityscape of Washington, D.C. If it's encoded similarly in around the Vatican and in the city, in City of London, then I either don't have the skill to recognize how it's encoded, or it's encoded much differently than it is in the landscape in Washington, D.C., using different symbols and So I wouldn't say that it's not there. I looked and I didn't see it. And it's so clearly, after you've done the research, you're familiar with the language, the symbols, what is being encoded, and then you can go and kind of dissect what you find in Washington, D.C., and you see it encoded literally backwards and forwards in some areas, overlapping using some of the same symbols, and it's in some, you know, for lack of a better example, it's encoded backwards and forwards. You know, you've got a count forward and a count down to this time, which, you know, makes sense because you could look at the transition of the ages from, you know, moving from the current great age or great year, the transition point to the new great age. You could look at that as the alpha and the omega point. And so in one sense, we're counting up to the completion of the current cycle, and then and you could also look at it as there's a countdown to year zero. There are multiple ways that information is related, and of course it's not intended for our eyes primarily. It's the encoders are the, you know, the masters of the upper levels of the, you know, secret societies, and this has been ongoing for the entirety of the American experiment, and, you know, goes back before that. But certainly this foreknowledge of this transition of the ages, you know, it's replete within, perhaps not all of them, but many of them, and this has been on their radar for centuries. And so what I found it kind of difficult to comprehend was the length of time that this foretelling or the encoding of this upcoming transition has been at the fore of esoteric thought and secret society planning, and then to see how many different ways moving forward through the decades from the, you know, found even before the founding of America, but certainly from that point moving forward, how many different events and instances and physical alignments, buildings, and so forth, really either encode this information or are a piece of the puzzle. When you stand back and look at it, you can begin to piece together slowly. But going back to 1776 and then moving forward over the decades, there are a surprising number of clues, instances where you see clear reference to this coming occasion. And if you think about it, you know, we're at the very end of this grand cycle. And, you know, knowledge of this cycle goes back to the Egyptians and the Babylonians, and we've got the universality of the zodiac, you know, that which is the clock by which this grand cycle of time is measured. And it, you know, so to see it getting close to the 12th hour, we're getting the minute hand is sweeping into place very quickly. And so, you know, 200 to 225 years is not that much time in the grand scheme of things and in context of this 26,000 year cycle. So that's was difficult for me to grasp and think about. Okay, you know, if you look at 9/11, as you dissect it, you kind of understand the different levels. You know, it is an event that was decades in the planning. That's difficult to grasp. This is on a different level altogether. And it may not be hard for, you know, some people who are steeped in esoteric occult doctrine to grasp something that's in the planning stages for this length of time. But for me, it was, you know, took some adjusting. The whole idea took some adjusting to. But then to see it injected in so many different events, staged events, significant events in the life of our country was really eye opening for me. And I hope it. Readers have the same experience that, you know, once you understand what the message is, you know, when we are in context of human history and this grand cycle of the ages, this great year, you understand why all of this emphasis has been, you know, placed on this transition, and you would then intuit that it is of such a substantial nature to occultists and globalists that they would mark it in very, very substantial ways and had decades, centuries to plan and convey this information in a myriad of ways. That's a broad scope. That's a large story. But I think that the evidence backs up that assertion that we're approaching a unique time in human history, and the elite are going to mark it. They have already marked it, indicated that it is of extreme importance to them and in their scheme. Now, what will they do when we arrive at the actual moment of transition? That's anybody's guess, but I think I lay out a pretty good scenario, a pretty well-informed scenario for what they might do. You could make the argument, however, that they are already, their plans for humanity are going so smoothly, so much to their favor, with so little resistance, that they really don't need a new, a mega 9/11 to push us over into a hot tyranny, to a global dictatorship. They're getting where they want to go as fast as they are, as efficiently as possible. But as we know from long experience, the global elite are not, they do not tend to let auspicious occasions pass without a grand celebration. So there are two ways to look at it. If you see their penchant for human sacrifice, for engaging acts to, that serve as a form of worship to their dark god, or the dark gods, the dark forces, you would see that this is an occasion that they will absolutely, you would tend to think that this is an occasion that they would absolutely not let pass unmarked, and more than likely they're going to mark it in spectacular fashion.
Our guest is Kent Bain. He's the author of the book Blackjack, The Dawning of the Great Age of Satan. Kent, if you please, would you tell listeners how you began to discover and research the connections to the layout of Washington, D.C. and decoding the galactic alignment clock here? Must have been a pretty interesting process.
Yeah, I followed, researched, read a lot about 2012 back in the years leading up to that event. And again, it was really all pinned to this mythological Mayan doomsday, which, the Mayans never said the world was going to come to a literal end. It was the, end of their calendar. But there were a lot of interesting books that I read by John Major Jenkins and others, and so came to have a fairly deep understanding of all the different aspects of the transition of the ages. And I thought about writing a book on 2012, but really didn't have anything unique to offer to the conversation, and ended up writing my first book, 9/11 as Mass Ritual, instead, because it seemed to me to be a much more compelling story. And, as I moved forward from completing that book, I had worked in Washington, D.C. for about 5.5 years and was, intimately familiar with the layout. But at the time that I was in D.C., just none of this was on my radar. And as I began to think forward and realize that the end of the Great Age and the beginning of the New Great Age had not yet technically occurred, I started, it's hard to describe how some of these things come together for you. And, some things you just kind of come across, and some things, you find by deep research. But I've started to formulate a picture of how the end of this age is encoded, could be encoded, in the most powerful city in the world. At first it was more of an intuition than anything else, but then as I turned over one rock after another, there was corroborating evidence there. And, again, some things just fall in your lap, some things you find because you're digging. As I began to have some understanding of the scope and the scale of this whole episode, and all of these different pieces of evidence began to connect, this very expansive, elaborate storyline unfolded, and I realized that it was literally written in stone in the streets of the city that I had walked for years. And so it was a really interesting experience, and it was a you know, something that your buildings and streets that you're so familiar with, to realize that they're a part of a communicating a message that is as significant as this one appears to be, you know, that's you know, it takes a bit of getting used to. So it was a really interesting, rewarding experience for me, and I try to capture some of that sense of awe that I had when I was learning about all this. I try to communicate that to the reader and you know, assist them through the process of discovery. And I, you know, I fully recognize that this is can be a hard pill to swallow, the, you know, the sort of the expanse of the story. But, you know, I hope that you and your listeners would agree after reading the book and looking at all the evidence and how I, you know, tie it all together, that my interpretation, while, you know, it may not be the only interpretation, it's certainly a valid interpretation. It's one of the, you know, it's one of a few possibilities for how to interpret what is what we find in the historical record and in our nation's capital.
I've had on past guests such as Nicholas Mann and others who go in depth about sacred geometry in the landscape, and very, very interesting to learn about that in ley lines, but there wasn't an overarching message in the symbols and the sacred geometry that was interpreted. Now, this is really the first time I've seen this level of interpretation and into specifically the calendar. And I think, yes, by doing the work and seeing the way the cryptocracy, the power structure have communicated in a very mocking tone to the public for reasons to create less karmic backlash for them.
Yeah.
I've not seen anything like this before. So I think it is valid. And after reading your book, Blackjack, seeing what you've lined up and what clues you've assembled here, it's very daunting evidence. Kent, the Captain William Morgan Monument in Batavia, New York, is inscribed with the statement, "The bane of our civil institutions is to be found in masonry, already powerful and daily becoming more so. I owe to my country and exposure of its dangers." Would you talk about the references to the elephant in the room, the son of Sam, the Masons, Samson, and how this connects to the work of author and past guest Michael Hoffman, and specifically his book, Secret Societies and Psychological Operations?
Look, in context of this grand unfolding, you know, decades, centuries old, certainly in looking at the history of the United States, there are seminal events that, once you begin to study them and examine them, they are more than what first meets the eye. They are occult rituals, public rituals, and that's been written about fairly extensively and documented, you know, whether it's the assassination of John F. Kennedy or Oklahoma City bombing. There have been a whole series of defining moments and events that were staged by the cryptocracy that were rituals unto themselves, but I think that I do a fairly effective job in the book of outlining how in quite a few, certainly not all, but in quite a few of these seminal events, defining moments, that you can find the symbols, the imagery, the numerology associated with galactic alignment and the transition of the ages. Can I or can anyone else say with certainty that these were prototype rituals or rituals that, you know, were unto themselves significant events, but that were also part of a chain of a larger series of events leading up towards and predicting in some fashion this grand alignment and transition of the ages? The reader would have to make up their own mind about that, but the son of Sam are ritual killings that Michael Hoffman did groundbreaking research on, wrote very effectively on. I think you can make an argument that there are a series of symbols, markers that are indicative of galactic alignment that are embedded in that ritual. And I've devoted a whole chapter to that.
David Berkowitz, the Son of Sam killer actually drew the symbols. Could you talk about that?
Well, he did, and that was, you know, that was one of those sort of aha moments for me as I became well familiar with the symbology of galactic alignment, transition of the ages, and then, you know, was just looking back for, you know, backwards through time, through some of these events, previous rituals, just, you know, kind of stood off the page at me that there were several illustrations and letters that are attributed to Berkowitz, have been proven to have been made by his hand, that while there may be alternative explanations, they are certain, you know, these illustrations are absolutely consistent and very clear markers of and symbols of galactic alignment. And I think there are enough of them that, you know, in this particular instance, that, you know, it deserves certainly a second look, and felt like it deserved a whole chapter in the book. Michael Hoffman did such groundbreaking work in explaining the, you know, the occult rationale behind the Son of Sam murders and many others, and he was one of the writers and researchers that really informed me early on and helped me understand sort of the scope of what is occurring. He does, I think, an unparalleled job of explaining what we're being subjected to, how far it goes back, how deep and dark it is. You know, there's a formula there, and you know, he never distills it down to, you know, a literal written formula, but once you follow how Michael Hoffman pieces these things together and then the very clear pattern that he establishes for these types of events, you can really use that to identify similar events. You know, if you start with one and you really understand it, it can lead you to have much, much deeper insight into quite a few others. And, you know, absent my reading of Hoffman's work, I may never have identified any of this. But certainly with the Son of Sam, there are markers that are consistent with the case that I'm laying out. And then there are certainly others that I point to over the decades from founding of the country forward that you could see as a chain of lesser rituals that are leading towards and building up to what could be the mother of all public rituals on the most auspicious occasion in the last 26,000 years. And you know very well that we are being driven ever more forcefully towards something. There's an escalation, there's a quickening that's occurring, and I don't think that it's coincidence that you've got that we have what is this unparalleled moment in human history and time by the occult count on the occult calendar, and we see this dramatic push, this ever escalating push in so many different areas of our lives, and this, you know, push towards consolidation of the power of the globalists, and really, what do we need? We need one more spark. You look at everything that was done on the back of the September 11th attacks. If you have something that's, you know, say only 10 times the magnitude of 9/11 or 20 times, that is the trigger that is needed, I think, to push us over into a world that we don't even want to imagine, but that is quickly taking shape around us. And will we get to where the globalists want us to go eventually anyway? I would say yes, but we know from long history that there are these triggering events that they engineer, and just in a very short span of time push us into a new paradigm, a new world. And if, you know, you want to think in terms of a new world order, well, the new great age is the new order of the ages. It is a new world. It's literally a new beginning, and they have set the stage for it to be, you know, a great age that is not favorable to us, to humanity. And in a lot of ways, there are aspects of where they're taking us that are, you know, truly satanic and Luciferian, and that you could make the argument they're dedicating this coming great age, they're setting the stage so that at that transition point, the switch is flipped and they are inaugurating the new great age of Satan. And I certainly realize there's a difference between the person of Satan and that of Lucifer, but for simplicity's sake, I just go with the label Satan. But the Luciferianism is the religion of the world elite, and so commemorating this grand occasion, this ultimate of auspicious occasions, it makes perfect sense looking back through history that they would use this time, this specific time that is, you know, fast approaching, to commemorate a new order of the ages, new world order, and dedicated to Lucifer himself. You know, that's does not sound very promising. It's not something that you know, any of us looks forward to. But I think it behooves us to understand the motivations and rationale of those that control the levers of power and control our every aspect of our existence.
The worship of the fallen angel Lucifer is more out in the open than I've ever seen it before. The number of exorcisms and demonic possessions have increased, the word straight out of the Vatican.
Right.
These halftime shows of entertainers such as Beyonce and Madonna, who mm-hmm. incorporate clearly Masonic rituals, dark agenda rituals, into their halftime performances. Yeah, I think you reference in your book Blackjack the 2012 Olympic opening ceremonies and the very, very dark references to a dystopian age throughout the whole ceremony.
Right.
What I really find intriguing about your book is how you've picked up on so many different clues, and I do understand it's certainly connected back to the work of your 2012 publication, The Most Dangerous Book in the World, 9/11 as a Mass Ritual. And you examined the codes within the events of September 11, 2001. But in Blackjack, you reference the Crescent of Embrace Memorial. And I understand that there's a mockery there. Would you talk about that in connection to Blackjack and the galactic alignment?
Well, the Crescent of Embrace is the memorial, official title of the memorial for the Flight 93 that was purportedly downed in Shanksville, Pennsylvania. And the design of the memorial is that of an Islamic crescent, and according to a number of researchers, it is also situated in the landscape according to, you know, a long-established Islamic architectural practices. It is situated in such a way that it points directly towards Mecca, and this is one of a whole series of elements, aspects of the 9/11 mega ritual that are just clear forms of mockery of the victims of that event. You know, what were, for all intents and purposes, human sacrifices. This was such a clear transgression, such an obvious slap in the face, that there was actually a public outcry that, you know, without any reference to, you know, occult rituals or anything of that nature, just the general public was immediately struck by the design of the Crescent of Embrace as you know, the Islamic crescent. And so it was modified somewhat, but it was another very obvious instance of how the cryptocracy doesn't just engage in human sacrifice and public ritual, but then after the fact, they will come back and we'll rub our noses in it in perpetuity, because obviously this memorial is still in place and it's not as egregious an offense as the original design was. It was modified somewhat to kind of reduce the appearance of its appearance as an Islamic symbol, but it's still there. It'll be there for decades, if not centuries. And so this is how the people that control our world think, how they operate, how they treat us. and absolutely view us as less than human.
Ken, would you talk about the numerological significance of 11 minutes after 11 o'clock or 11:11 in the context of the end of ages?
Without getting too deep into the mathematics, and certainly recognizing the 11:11 phenomenon that was associated with 2012 and galactic alignment, there are at least two fundamental ways you can express the number of years and the cycles involved with the great age, and that you can mathematically express the cycle of precession, this 26,000-year cycle. And one of those involves sets of 1,111, and you just really have to see the written formula for it to make sense. And it's not extensive, it's not that complicated, it's just better seen on paper. But if you look back at 2012, into the Mayan age, fifth age, that was set to occur on, of course, December 21st, the winter solstice, and the precise time of the winter solstice in 2012, as listed on the U.S. Naval Observatory's website for years in advance leading up to 2012, was 11:11. Now, was it actually 11:11? Was this a message from the cosmos, or is that just what they put there because there's a mathematical relationship between 11:11 and 12:21, which is December 21st, and I would argue that there is a bit of a mathematical code there that is one of the methods that the cryptocracy has used to express this grand unfolding of this cycle of time, large cycle of time, and so that what you end up with is that the dates associated with this end of the age are actually in code and represent the mathematics that are tied to this cycle. And again, there are several different ways that they add up these subsets of years to the grand total. You know, they're essentially clocks. Without going into a lot of detail, there's a particular calendar that Elizabethan astrologer John Dee developed that ties directly into this, that is, you know, it's essentially one and the same. It's this grand clock of the great age. You're probably like me, that when you get into enough of this numerology, your eyes start to glaze over, but we have to pay attention to it and do a certain amount of examination of the numbers, the numerology, because that's part of the language, the occult language that they've used to encode and represent the great age itself, and then use in the countdown, you know, or count up towards the end of the great age and the transition to the new great age of Satan. It's not complicated. That doesn't involve algorithms or decimal points. It's pretty straightforward. It's fairly striking. It makes for boring listening, but you can look at it and get it immediately. And then once you see it, then you start to see events, some of these rituals that we've been talking about, some of these lesser rituals that include those numbers and or take place on dates that involve these numbers. And so you see that there's this unwinding clock that a lot of things that you just think are one-off rituals or one-off events, well, they're taking place with regularity and, you know, not necessarily exactly the same every time, but once you know what the calendar looks like, what the clock looks like, you can say, okay, well, this occurred, you know, at a very specific time on this calendar that's, you know, counting towards the end of the great age. So it can be a little bit tedious, but I try to, you know, condense it, minimize it so that it's very obvious and evident what we're looking at. And it is fairly straightforward, and you can, once you, I guess, know the language, you know that the time, you can see the clock, you can see how things were set accordingly. But I try to not belabor the math or the numerology, but it's an essential part of this I call it script, called language. Well, the world we presently occupy is so engineered against the interests of humanity that it is truly hard, unless you know you're immersed in this like we are, to grasp. And I think more and more people are awakening and are aware of it. But when you see the true scope of this, you know, plan for full spectrum dominance and just how broad it is, and how many, it involves every aspect of our lives, from you know medical care to food production to you know the communication technologies. You see how complete it is, and maybe it's not coming to a head, but it sure looks like it. And it would be just right in time for mother of all auspicious occasions. You know, we get to that point in time and they flip the switch on all of this, and you know everything is in place. 5G network is in place. Our health, our spiritual selves, we're being constantly degraded. What you would expect to find in the lead up to some massive assault, final assault perhaps on humanity, or some transfer over into a new, even darker world than we occupy now, where literally darkness rules. I mean, we see that infrastructure in place, and we see that it's ever more sophisticated, ever more fully implemented. And when you truly understand how pervasive this control network is, that the noose is being pulled ever more tightly, and you understand where we are in the span of human history, it doesn't seem possible that that is a coincidence. And so those of us that intuit and can look at the evidence and discern that, you know, we are being herded down the chute towards the slaughterhouse, and how this matches up with the penultimate event on the occult calendar, that's a scary thought. And when a situation where there's absolutely no hope, I wouldn't argue that. I think we have to fully understand what we're up against, what we're faced with. One of our best weapons is to educate ourselves and to truly understand the scope of the danger. But we, I think that if we abandon hope, then you know we're certainly truly lost.
This type of material can be a little formidable, but this is a fair warning that you have delivered in this publication titled Blackjack, The Dawning of the New Great Age of Satan, published by Trine Day. Kent, I want to thank you for being on In Other News and bringing this really powerful and fascinating research into the public domain. Again, thank you for being on In Other News.
Well, thank you, and I really enjoyed the conversation.
That's going to do it for In Other News. I'm Jeff Brady. Visit inothernewsradio.com for archives and more information about the guests.